I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
So who do they want to run?
They want you to run.
For what?
Governor, they want you to run.
I don't know.
It's not to know. This is what you've been waiting for.
We have a problem.
We do not have a problem. We have a golden opportunity.
Listen to me, David.
Catherine's family is well respected here and in Washington. We could take
this. We have a problem.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do.
What are you talking about?
Candace.
Who's Candace?
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subjects today will be the new TV series The Haves and the Have-Nots and Graceland. John Schneider from The Haves and the Have-Nots and Daniel Sunjata and Aaron Tveit from Graceland will join us for a fascinating excursion exploring these exciting and dramatic TV series. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
Is Jesse Donald Knotts?
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we travel both upstairs and downstairs as we experience the trials and tribulations of the haves and the have-nots. In this edition of our program, we are pleased to welcome the star of Tyler Perry's first television drama, The Haves and Have-Nots, John Schneider. Best known for playing Beau Duke on the classic TV series The Dukes of Hazzard, Mr. Schneider's prolific TV career also includes prominent roles in such series as Desperate Housewives, Nip Tuck, and Smallville. Over the next segment, John Schneider will help us explore virtually every aspect of this dramatic series, which airs Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on OWN, as we preside over the dirty dealings of Judge Jim Cryer, the patriarch featured in The Haves and the Have-Nots. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to lie, cheat, and steal, feel free to Judge Jim Cryer as we leave behind our middle-class past and move into a very opulent present.
From heaven to hell.
John, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
My pleasure. Delighted to be here.
John, you're starring in the new TV series, The Haves and the Have-Nots, airing every Tuesday night on the OWN network. John, what is the premise of The Haves and the Have-Nots?
The Haves and the Have-Nots is a story about a ridiculously wealthy family in Savannah whose patriarch, that's me, is a judge in town. And even though it appears that they have everything, they really are an incredibly screwed-up family, very dysfunctional family. The son is in rehab and falls off the wagon daily. My delightful little daughter has bouts with depression and has tried to kill herself several times. So on the surface, it appears we have a lot, but really we have nothing. That sounds very depressing, but somehow Tyler Perry has managed to make this story of extreme dysfunction be very funny, very dramatic, very compelling, and he's written a cliffhanger into every episode. So at the end of every hour-long episode, you are left thinking, oh, my God, how am I going to wait until next week to see what happens now? So it's a very cleverly done piece of theater. I would call it a piece of theater.
Tell us a little bit more about your character, and do you prefer playing a villain versus some of the nice guy roles you've played in your career?
You know, I think I've played enough nice guys now. and it is true. It's more fun to play the bad guy. It's more fun to go after people vehemently and ruin their lives in an acting way. So Jim Cryer has a lot of things that he wants to get done. He's running for governor, perhaps. Maybe he won't because he prefers his call girls to dealing with people on the Hill. It's a very interesting story. So the most fascinating thing to me about this particular character is that he doesn't seem to be very concerned about being caught with his hands in the cookie jar. I think he is so full of himself that he doesn't feel that anyone could really give him a hard time about anything. And that is wickedly enjoyable to play.
So would you say that he's more amoral than immoral?
Oh yeah, he's amoral.
Yeah.
He's completely amoral. He has no feeling whatsoever about he just doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what may happen as a result of his actions today, except with regard to his daughter. He loves his daughter. So when he starts to get when the fruits of his labors come up and they start to affect, they could possibly affect his daughter, that's the only time that he feels as if he may have overstepped some sort of a boundary.
Now, you mentioned Tyler Perry before. To say the least, he's very hands-on when it comes to this production. What is it like working with him, and what is his creative process?
It's fantastic working with Tyler. He is there every day, every minute of every day. His creative process appears to be, he writes a wonderful blueprint. The scripts are fantastic. The dialogue is really, truly amazing and easy to remember, which is the mark of good dialogue, actually. Oftentimes people will say that good dialogue is easy to remember, and if I can't remember the dialogue, it's probably not written very well. And that's true. But his creative process is to surround himself, I think, my observation, is that he surrounds himself with people who can do the job, who have the talent, have the skill, have the history to do the job, and then he lets them do it. He's not a micromanager at all. So it's a very creative atmosphere to do a television show in, which is why we managed to be able to do 16 episodes in 22 working days.
Wow. Wow.
16 hour-long episode. Yeah, it's remarkable.
So he has you guys really working then.
He has us really working, but nobody works harder than him. You know, it's one thing to have a taskmaster that's sitting there drinking a mint julep with his feet up on the desk, and it's another thing to have somebody there who is obviously the hardest working person in the room, and that's always Tyler. Tyler is always the hardest working person in any room he's in. So when you have Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey in the same room,
right,
it's kind of a competition to see who can outwork the other one.
Now, of course, you're well known for playing Bowduke on the classic TV series The Dukes of Hazzard, but how does this set and this production compare with your experience on Dukes?
Oh, my, I can barely remember my experience on Dukes. it really doesn't. It's we're shooting digitally now. We're shooting with three cameras, sometimes four cameras now. In the Dukes days, we shot single camera film. And we would shoot 7 days on first unit and often 7 days on second unit. So it was a 14-day shoot for 1 hour of television. Now, on the haves and the have-nots, we shot an episode every 1 1/8 days.
Wow.
So it's an entirely different experience for me. Different from Smallville, different from Nip Tuck, different from Dr. Quinn. I've never seen anything quite like it. Now, of course, we in those other shows, we were on the set often, but we were also outside. So far in The Haves and the Have-Nots, we ventured outside very little.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was more of a result of the fact that we were in Atlanta during the rainy season. I don't think it had anything to do with Tyler thinking that's any particular challenge. But also, and when Dukes of Hazzard was on, it was a three-network world. You know, now we're in, I don't know how many channels we have.
800.
so people have to work harder now to get an audience for their show. But by the same token, people, when they do get an audience for their show, I think the networks are and cable stations are far more appreciative of whatever audience they do get. Dukes of Hazzard averaged a 28 share for 7 years, and nobody really appreciated that. Now, if you average a two and a half, a three share, people are throwing you a party.
Right. It's a lot more of a niche experience, and part of that experience is social media. Now, if social media existed back in the Dukes days,
oh, sure.
How do you think that would have made things different for you and the cast?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know that we could have had the anonymity that we had. It was important. Remember, Dukes was, we were shot in Los Angeles, California. And yet we were out in the middle of kind of nowhere when we did it. It depended a lot upon the believability. There weren't any cell phones in Dukes of Hazzard land. There was no technology really. And I think if we tried to do Dukes of Hazzard today, and in between takes, we were tweeting and we were on our cell phones,
right,
and we were texting and we were doing all that kind of stuff, I think it would kill a lot of the innocence of what was created back then. I really do. I mean, I love social media. I have a blog, John Schneider's Common Sense blog. I do that. I tweet. I do Facebook. I mean, I do all that stuff and I enjoy it. But I do think a certain innocence is gone now because of social media.
Now, John, you've enjoyed an incredibly varied and successful career. Do you have a secret?
Work your ass off. Yeah, you just you have to just work, get as much experience as you can, be as varied as you can, gather up as many different life experience as you can and work experiences as you can. The number one thing is that I'm never somebody that expects the phone to ring. I'm in the make the phone ring business.
Right.
I'm in the get work business, create work business. During Dukes, even when we would have our hiatus every year, I was the one that was going out and doing the movies for television or going out and working with Kirk Douglas. I never stopped working,
right,
because I love it so much. But I did. I did largely with my team of people create that work. Made the phone ring. A lot of people sit around and say, "Okay, well now I'm famous. I guess people are going to want to hire me." No. That's not how it works. You still have to go out, and oftentimes I think you have to work even harder once people know who you are. Does not necessarily mean they think you can deliver the goods. So a lot of times it's even harder after you are quote-unquote iconic to get new and unusual jobs like this job for me on The Haves and the Have-Nots. I had to work hard to get this role. This was not given to me. I wanted it badly.
John Schneider starring as Jim Cryer in The Haves and the Have-Nots, airing every Tuesday night on the OWN Network. John, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
I certainly will, Jim. You have a wonderful day. I like that.
Stay tuned for an interview with the cast of Graceland right after these brief messages.